Welcome back, guys, to another episode of Crime with Holly. I'm your host, Crime Holly. Today's episode, I am really excited to bring to you guys. This case is a very recent one, and the murder trial has yet to happen, but the preliminary hearing is this coming May. I haven't completely figured out the full logistics yet, but when this case finally goes to trial, I want to do a daily recap on one of my social media platforms to give you guys the play-by-play. I am sure a lot of you guys have heard about this case when an arrest was made in this past May of 2023. I look forward to hearing what everyone's thoughts are on this case, and I just want to put this little extra tidbit in here that this case and the details of this case really paints a picture of one individual. It paints them obviously in a very negative light. However, as I stated, the trial has yet to happen. So though it seems very obvious and the details that I provide to you guys is going to seem very obvious of who did it, we do have to remember that this individual is innocent until proven guilty. The trial could definitely expose some information that is not out there yet to prove this person's innocence. So I just want you guys to go into this with an open mind, even though the details point like big, huge, massive neon arrows at one individual. So with that said, let's go ahead and get into the details of this case. Today's case is on the murder of Eric Richens. Eric Eugene Richens was born on May 13, 1982 in Bountiful, Utah to his parents Gene and Linda Richens. Eric was their first child, and they would eventually go on to have two more children, two little girls, named Katie and Amy. Eric was an incredible big brother. He was very protective of his little sisters, and he loved them fiercely. Eric grew up on the family cattle ranch, so from an early age, Eric was taught to be hardworking and driven. He grew up helping the family with ranch duties, whether it was hauling hay, feeding the animals, or mending fences. He was out there working in the early morning hours alongside his dad and siblings. But from what I've learned, it didn't seem like Eric minded the hard work and being outside. He loved keeping horses and cows around, and overall, he was just a very outdoorsy person. He loved to go hunting and was an excellent archer and marksman. He even had multiple trophy animals that he hunted from all around the world, including places like Africa, Mexico, Canada, and of course, the United States. Growing up, Eric was a serious athlete, and he loved all sports. He participated in cross country, basketball, baseball, and soccer. Eric was very big into motorized toys, and it was said that he owned almost every type of motorized toy possible, including four-wheelers, side-by-sides, trucks, and snowmobiles. He was just extremely adventurous, and his family laughs and jokes that Eric held the Richens family record for the most rolls and collisions of motorized vehicles. He had been involved in one very serious accident where he had to receive 200 stitches on his face, but that did not stop Eric from doing what he loved. If you can't tell, Eric was extremely adventurous. Not only was Eric adventurous and fearless, but he also had a heart of gold. He supported many organizations that he believed in, but he did so kind of behind the scenes. Eric wasn't the type of person that wanted any kind of recognition for things that he did. He didn't want the attention because that wasn't the reason why he gave and did those things. He did it because he wanted to. So he always made sure to do most things like donating money anonymously. Eric was the type of person that he had never met a stranger. You could be a random person walking down the street, and if you needed something, he was there to lend a hand. He just truly cared about people and always tried to find ways to make situations and life better for those that he knew and loved. Eric was also a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and he served a 2-year mission in New Mexico, where he learned to speak Spanish fluently. After returning from his mission, Eric enrolled at the University of Utah, and he earned his bachelor's in international studies with a minor in Spanish. And it was there at the University of Utah that Eric met Julie Jorgensen, who, after dating for a brief time, became his wife. 2 years after graduating, Eric and his close friend, Cody Wright, founded their business called C&E Stone Masonry. In this business, Eric and Cody did very impressive work. They laid stone walkways, did intricate outdoor stonework on homes, they created beautiful custom fireplaces, and did tile work in high-end homes. In 2009, Julie and Eric called their marriage quits, and there isn't much information out there about the end of their marriage and what caused it. But I do know, however, emotionally and financially, this was very taxing on both Julie and Eric. Because there was no prenuptial agreement prior to them getting married, this left Julie entitled to some of the earnings that Eric was making with his business. Now, I'm not sure a lot of the logistics and the details of all of this, but it's an important thing to mention that might seem insignificant at this time, but just keep that in mind. So, 2 years after their divorce, Julie was killed in a tragic car accident. And though their marriage was over, Eric mourned for her, and that was a very tough loss for him. During the years after the ending of their marriage, Eric dated around in hopes to find someone who he really clicked with so he could finally start a family. Becoming a father was something that Eric had always longed for, but every time he started to date someone new, things just didn't work out. In early 2010, a family friend named Linda King thought that she found Eric's perfect match. Linda worked at Home Depot as a cashier, and one of her coworkers was a beautiful young woman named Corey. She thought that Corey was totally Eric's type, and when Eric had been in at the Home Depot picking up supplies for his business, Linda saw Eric eyeing Corey. She took the opportunity to encourage Eric to talk to her. Corey was working as a cashier at Home Depot, and typically Eric would just go and cash out with Linda when he was in. But with Linda's encouragement, he went to Corey's register, and the two immediately hit it off. Eric asked Corey out, and she agreed. From that day forward, Corey and Eric were connected at the hip. Soon, they were introducing each other to their families, and Corey's brothers loved Eric and welcomed him with open arms. He just seemed to fit their family puzzle perfectly. On June 15th, 2013, after a few years of dating, Corey and Eric got married in a beautiful backyard wedding surrounded by their closest friends and family. They also signed a prenup at the suggestion of Eric's mother, and she did this after what happened with his first marriage. She really encouraged him to protect himself in his second marriage, so they signed one. According to ABC4, the prenup outlined that in the event that Corey and Eric got divorced, that Eric's ownership of certain assets would fully remain his. It also was written out that if Eric were to die before Corey, she could claim ownership of some of those assets so long as they were still lawfully married. These assets included Eric's 50% ownership interest in the C&E Stone Masonry LLC, a forklift, skid steer, scaffolding, and saws, 2 trucks, and a dump trailer. After getting married, the two moved to Francis, Utah, which is about 50 minutes from Salt Lake City. They settled into a beautiful home located off of Willow Court, and it wasn't long before they started their family. In total, Corey and Eric would have three beautiful boys named Carter, Ashton, and Weston. By all accounts, Eric was a doting father, and his children were his absolute pride and joy. He did everything within his power to provide for his family and to give them every possible opportunity to learn and grow and just have fun. When his own children were old enough to begin playing in sports, Eric was first to volunteer to help coach the teams. He taught his children to completely give it their all and to play aggressive on the field. Eric cared not only for his own children's growth in sports, but he also cared about every single child that he coached. He wanted nothing but the best for each kid on the team, and he showed each one of them the same love and devotion that he did to his own children. Life seemed to be going amazing for Corey and Eric. From the outside looking in, they had a picture-perfect family. They had it all. Three beautiful boys, what appeared to be a strong and thriving marriage, a very successful business, and a lavish home. But unbeknownst to Eric, Corey started making some serious financial moves. Between 2015 and 2017, Corey took out four different life insurance policies out on Eric, totaling $2 million. Soon thereafter, Corey withdrew and spent $250,000 from their home equity, took out $100,000 from Eric's bank accounts. She also spent $30,000 on his credit cards and also stole money from his business that he had set aside for his quarterly taxes. All of this was done without his knowledge, and she did it with a fake power of attorney that she forged his signature on. In April of 2019, Corey started her own business where she was buying and flipping homes for a profit. She founded the K. Richens Realty LLC, and according to what her family told 48 Hours, Corey would have up to three houses at one time that she was working on. In September 2020, Eric learned the truth of how much money Corey stole from him and his business. And when he confronted her about it, she was very apologetic. Corey claimed that she needed the money to launch her house flipping business and that she would pay him back for every single cent that she took. However, according to a CBS News article, Corey's mother, Lisa Darden, states that Corey didn't steal a single dime from Eric, and that Eric was always aware of the family's finances. She states that Corey and Eric sat down every single month to do bills together, and Eric knew what money was going in and what money was going out at all times. Eric's family, on the other hand, says, absolutely not. He was in complete darkness, and when he found out in September 2020, he was so upset that he went and met with a divorce attorney as well as an estate planning attorney the following month. Now, I will say that it does seem like Eric and Corey tried to work on their marriage and work through things, but I think ultimately trust was broken for Eric, and he struggled with the lies and the stealing from Corey, and rightfully so. But he did meet with this divorce attorney as well as the estate planning lawyer, and he did all of this without Corey knowing. It was during this meeting in October 2020 that Eric changed his will and formed the Eric Richens Living Trust. According to ABC4, Eric placed his estate and life insurance under the control of his sister Katie for the primary benefit of his three children. He also transferred his partnership interest in his business to his trust. The estate planning lawyer named Crystal Bowman Carter stated that when she met with Eric, he told her that he had two primary goals. Quote, his first goal was to protect him in the short term from fairly recently discovered and ongoing abuse and misuse of his finances by his wife, Corey Richens. His second was to protect the three young sons he and Corey had together in the long term by ensuring that Corey would never be in a position to manage his property after his death, end quote. So while he was working on his marriage and they were going to counseling, things seemed to be going decently. But Eric clearly had this gut feeling that he needed to protect his finances and his children in case he died. CBS News states that Corey didn't learn about this trust until after Eric's death. Now, I will say that Corey's family and Eric's family both have differing things to say about their relationship. Corey's family states that Eric had an affair on his wife and that the two were in counseling for that reason. Eric's family states that it was Corey who had been unfaithful, and even though Eric was suspicious of Corey's behavior, the alleged affair, and the stealing, Eric just wanted to work on their marriage for the sake of their children. Those boys were his pride and joy, and he didn't want to be forced to live apart from them. Somehow, though, Corey found out in January 2022 that she had been removed as the beneficiary of Eric's life insurance policy. I'm not sure how she found out, but my guess is that she was snooping his stuff and nosing around in things that she shouldn't have been. Instead of asking Eric about it, she went ahead and changed the beneficiary back to herself without authorization. Because this policy was through his business partner was notified of the change, and he contacted Eric asking him what was going on. Eric then, of course, changed it back. I just want to say, if all of this was happening with my spouse, red flags would be flying. I would be so incredibly suspicious of what my husband's plans were and worried that he was going to kill me. And apparently, Eric felt the same. He knew something wasn't right, and he told several friends and family that if something was to ever happen to him, to look into his wife, Corey. But not only was the life insurance situation weird for Eric, he also felt like he may have been poisoned while on a trip to Greece that happened a few years before in 2019. According to the Salt Lake Tribune, while on a trip to Greece, Corey gave Eric a drink, and shortly thereafter, he became violently ill. Once he was able, Eric called his sister, and he told her that he thinks that Corey tried to kill him. Then on Valentine's Day 2022, Corey prepared a sandwich for Eric and gave it to him with a love note attached. After eating the sandwich, KPCW reports that Eric had an allergic reaction and broke out into hives and was struggling to breathe. He ended up grabbing his son's EpiPen and used it on himself, took some Benadryl before going to sleep. After waking up, Eric called his business partner Cody and told him what had happened, and he once more expressed his concerns that Corey was possibly trying to kill him. That attempt obviously wasn't successful and he survived, but Eric's luck was about to run out. On the evening of March 3rd, 2022, Eric Richens and his wife, Corey, were spending a quiet evening at home. According to Corey, the two were celebrating together the closing on a property she purchased for her house flipping business. This property wasn't your average home and was said to be the biggest project Corey had to date. The property was purchased for over $3 million and was estimated to make Corey a $12 million profit after she was finished flipping it. This was a massive, massive project. The home was located in Heber City, Utah, and was a 20,000 square foot mansion that was left unfinished. The 10-acre property also had a 4,000-square-foot guest house on it as well that was also unfinished. So not only was the property over $3 million to purchase, it was said that it was going to cost another $2 million to finish the mansion. Leading up to the closing on this property, Corey and Eric had fought nonstop about it. Corey was all gung-ho about it, and Eric wanted nothing to do with it. He was not willing to pay the hefty price and felt like the risk of losing money was far greater than the possibility of actually coming out ahead. On top of the possibility of losing a substantial amount of money, the locals in Heber City hated this house. They wanted it torn down and felt like it was an eyesore. This just did not seem like a smart financial move, so Eric was against it. But despite what her husband wanted, Corey continued with the purchase of this property. So as I said, it was the evening of March 3rd, 2022, and Corey brought her husband, Eric, a celebratory drink so he could celebrate with her around 9 p.m. She handed him the Moscow Mule as he sat up in bed. The two spent some time together chatting while Eric drank his Moscow Mule, which Corey claimed he only had one of. She also said that Eric took a THC gummy, which he frequently did, to help him sleep, and then their evening together was interrupted by one of their children, who had woken up from a night terror. Corey claimed that she left their bedroom to go attend to their child, leaving behind her cell phone on the charger. She went into their son's room and laid down with him while she waited for him to fall back asleep. While she was laying with her son, Corey claims that she also fell asleep. And sometime around 3 a.m. is when she woke back up and went to her room and climbed into bed with Eric. That is when Corey said she noticed that Eric was cold to the touch. She tried to push on him to wake him up, but he didn't respond. She immediately called 911 and was instructed by the dispatcher to begin CPR. First responders arrived on scene at 3:22 a.m. and they found Eric lying on the floor near the foot of the bed and they began their own life-saving measures. Corey told them that she had been performing CPR per the instruction of the dispatcher, but according to KPCW, fire and EMS responders said that it was unlikely that she was doing that because Eric still had blood coming from his mouth. Despite the attempts that the EMTs made, 39-year-old Eric Richens was declared dead. When the news spread of his passing, friends and family were so incredibly heartbroken, and it was a complete shock. Eric was overall a very healthy and active man. He spent his free time out hiking around, hunting, coaching sports for his kids' teams. He traveled. All seemed well. This was extremely hard for everyone to process, and initially they didn't know what his cause of death was. The EMTs on scene had said that Eric may have passed from a brain aneurysm, and so that is what Corey started telling people. While everyone was still reeling from the news of Eric's passing, Corey, the very next day, was signing the paperwork for that unfinished mansion that she claims that she was celebrating the closing of the night before with Eric. Later that evening, again, let me remind you, the day after her husband died, Corey invited friends over for a large party where she was drinking and once more celebrating the purchase of the mansion. Now, if it were me, the last thing I would be doing is worrying about signing paperwork on a multi-million dollar project when my husband, the main provider for the family, mind you, the person who was likely footing the bill for this house, the person who also didn't want the dang house to begin with, had just died. I am not trying to judge someone on how someone mourns and does their thing after the tragic loss of their significant other. But okay, yeah, I'm judging. Like, I can't help it. The entire thing is wrong. And everyone, and I mean everyone, thought it was a major red flag. Like, seriously, who freaking does that? Corey Richens, apparently. Now, At some point during that day, Eric's sister went to the home where the two got into a physical altercation. Documents state that Corey punched Eric's sister, Amy, in the neck and the face. According to Corey's brother, who says that he was there when the altercation happened, Corey was attempting to get into the gun safe because she had just learned from Eric's sister that Corey wasn't in charge of the estate and that pretty much everything belonged to his sisters because of Eric's trust. Now, Corey's family says that she was trying to get into the gun safe to look for paperwork about this trust. If Eric had paperwork on it, it would be in the safe. Amy tried to go for Corey to stop her from getting into the safe, and documents state that inside the safe there had been up to $165,000 cash inside. This is when Corey's brother says that he stepped between the girls while they were trying to swing over the top of him to hit each other. Eventually, Amy stormed off and called the police, and a month after this altercation, charges were pressed against Corey, which she pled no contest. 2 weeks after the death of Eric, Corey put that mansion back on the market, listing it for almost $5 million. So, obviously, an autopsy was done on Eric's body, and they found that he did not die from a brain aneurysm like they initially speculated. But instead, Eric died from a lethal dose of fentanyl. According to the medical examiner, Eric had 5 times the lethal dosage of fentanyl in his system, and that the fentanyl found in his system was illicit fentanyl and not medical grade. The medical examiner also stated that it was his opinion that the fentanyl had been ingested orally. This was very shocking to Eric's family and friends. Eric wasn't the type of person to experiment with drugs or opioids. Corey was questioned by the authorities but was released to continue about her life. So while everyone was mourning the loss of Eric and being shocked by the news of how he died, the relationship between Corey and Eric's family was strained. On the 1 year anniversary of Eric's death, Corey posted a video slideshow of pictures of Eric and their family on Facebook. She also gave it the caption, quote, "Life is so damn hard without you. The cards I have been dealt just seem like a game that can't be played," end quote. A few days later, Corey published a children's book that she wrote with the help of her children called Are You With Me? Corey would later appear on Good Things Utah. She first got in contact with them when she emailed them wanting to promote her new book. And so when she went on the show, she discussed the release of her new children's book about grief. And she explained that the book is inspired by her own kids' questions about grief and death. She told them that she began researching things to try and understand how to grieve as a widow, but also how to help her kids with their grief and help them understand what happened. Corey said that nights were the most difficult times for her children, and so she wanted to write a children's book to help them cope. She also told KPCW that she had plans to write sequels for the book, titling the second book, Mom, How Far Away is Heaven? After the interview with Good Things Utah, the news station started receiving anonymous emails stating that Corey killed her husband and she wasn't who she seemed. The two women that interviewed Corey recalled Corey seeming a little bit off. She didn't want to remove her jacket before going live. She was stumbling over her words. She seemed cold, and her overall appearance to these two interviewers kind of seemed like she was unkempt. Now, initially, the women just assumed that Corey was still grieving. It had only been 1 year since Eric's passing. Things were still possibly raw and real for Corey, or so they thought. But if you watch the interview, which I will have linked in the description of this episode, Corey does seem very nervous. She's stumbling over her words, and experts have now analyzed the interview and said that that's because she's lying. Now, I have to say, it does seem like Corey's nervous while being interviewed. And I have to admit that I have been on the news several times being interviewed about my previous podcast, and I stumbled over my words like crazy. I was so incredibly nervous that the words just weren't jiving with my mouth. It wasn't working. Being on live television is very nerve-wracking if you're not used to it and not used to having cameras in your face. So that honestly could be why Corey is struggling and stumbling over her words. This Good Things Utah interview happened on April 6, 2023. Then, 1 month later, on May 8, 2023, Corey Richens was arrested for her husband's murder. She was charged with one count of first-degree aggravated murder and three counts of possession of a controlled substance with the intent to distribute. So, backing up just a little bit, when they got the autopsy and toxicology report back and found that Eric had died of a fentanyl overdose, investigators obtained a search warrant for the Richens home. They collected evidence including Corey's cell phone as well as computers. Straight out the gate, they found that Corey's phone had been used during that time when Corey claimed that she had been asleep in her children's room while her husband was dying in their bedroom. Not only did they find that the phone had been unlocked and locked several times, but they also found that the phone was wandering around the home, so this couldn't have been chalked up to Eric using her phone. Corey specifically stated that she left the phone in their bedroom on the charger when she left the room to deal with her child who was having a night terror. But after forensic analysis of the phone, they found that it had been used, had been moving about the house, and several text messages had been sent, which Corey had deleted, thinking that they wouldn't be recovered. They also made the shocking discovery that Corey had been in communication with someone who had a record, and on their record, they had multiple counts of possession of a controlled substance with intent to distribute, possession of a controlled substance, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Corey's arrest warrant identifies this person as CL. Corey and CL had communications between December 2021 and February 2022. Corey had reached out to CL asking for prescription pain medication for an investor who had a back injury. A few days later, Corey purchased hydrocodone pills from CL. 2 weeks later, Corey contacted CL again and said that the investor wanted something stronger this time. And she requested some of the, quote, Michael Jackson stuff. She then specifically asked for fentanyl. According to the arrest warrant, CL contacted their dealer in Ogden on February 11, 2022 and purchased 15 to 30 fentanyl pills. Corey went to CL's home in Heber, where she paid $900 for those pills. Then, 3 days later, was Valentine's Day, where Eric ate that sandwich and became sick. Another 2 weeks go by, and Corey is once more contacting CL, asking for another $900 worth of fentanyl pills. 6 days later, Eric was found dead. The authorities also found some pretty damning searches on her devices as well. Corey had searched and then deleted her search history, things like, can deleted text messages be retrieved from an iPhone? Can FBI find deleted messages? FBI searching electronics? And what is a lethal dose of fentanyl? Corey's defense attorney, Sky Lazaro, says that all of these searches are innocent, and they were done after Eric's cause of death was revealed, and she did those things because she was simply just curious and looking for answers. Since her arrest, it has also been found that Corey owed several people a whole lot of money. Not only did she owe Eric, her own husband, money, but she also owed money to a moneylender, as well as the federal government for unpaid taxes. Corey's family tells 48 Hours that being denied bail while she awaits trial has been very hard on Corey. They feel like she is being wrongly convicted and that eventually the truth will come out. While in custody, her family says that Corey had a medical emergency when, in September 2023, she was given the wrong medication and experienced seizures from it, and she had to be rushed to the hospital. Corey made a full recovery, but while away at the hospital, jail officials went through her cell and found something that is now referred to as the Walk the Dog letter. This was an unsent 6-page letter allegedly written by Corey, and it's referred to as the Walk the Dog letter because on the top of the very first page in big letters, it says Walk the Dog. Now, her mom says the reason why it says Walk the Dog is because they have Corey's old dog and Corey's constantly telling them to walk the dog. And so that was written up there as a reminder to walk the dog. Now, according to parkrecord.com, the letter written by Corey requests that her mother, Lisa Darden, asks her brother, Ronald, or Ronnie Darden, to provide false testimony. The letter also appeared to include instruction for Corey's friend on how to talk about Eric on an upcoming interview on Good Morning America. It seems like it's instructing her to tell stories about him partying or the constant jealousy from his sisters. After the discovery of that letter in September, in November 2023, prosecutors filed a motion for a no-contact order requesting that Corey be denied the right to speak to her mother, Lisa, and her brother, Donnie. The motion claims that the Walk the Dog letter is witness tampering. In the letter, Corey writes that her defense needs to establish that Eric bought drugs while traveling outside of the country in Mexico. The letter states, quote, "We need some kind of connection. Here is what I'm thinking, but you have to talk to Ronnie. He would probably have to testify to this," end quote. Another part of the letter reads, quote, "Ronnie should have texts from Eric talking about getting high as well. Reword this however he needs to make the point. Just include it all. The connection has to be made with Mexico and drugs," end quote. 48 Hours directly asked Lisa Darden, Corey's mother, if Corey is giving her instructions in the letter on what to do, and Lisa just states that she doesn't know. When Donnie is asked the same question, he says most of the things that they're asking are things that he is not allowed to speak about. Lisa adds that things in the letter are true things, and everybody already in Corey's circle knew about these things. Now, Corey, on the other hand, says that this letter is all fiction and is part of a book that she's been writing while in jail. The judge denied the motion and Corey is still allowed to communicate with her family. Her attorney says that the letter isn't witness tampering because the letter was never sent, and she agreed with the judge that the state failed to prove witness tampering. Corey and Eric's three children are currently living with one of Eric's family members, and they're allowed to talk to their mom only twice a week over video calls from jail. Both Eric and Corey's family state that the biggest concern is the children and their happiness, and that both families want to adopt the boys when this is all said and done. As we know, Eric had a lot of suspicions about his wife. He felt like she was poisoning him. He felt the need to change the beneficiary in case something happened to him. And he even went as far as telling his closest friends and family that if something were to happen, to look into Corey. So a lot of people want to know, if Eric was so suspicious of his wife, why would he stay? Attorney Greg Scordis, who is the family's spokesperson, stated, quote, "It appears that Eric may have stayed in a relationship that wasn't good because he loved his boys and wanted to keep the family relationship together, and maybe he was hopeful that things would change. But his number one concern was for his boys," end quote. At this time, Corey's preliminary hearing is scheduled for May 15th, 2024. She continues to claim that she is innocent and her family stands behind her. Eric's family is ready for justice and feel that she is completely at fault and took their beloved Eric from them. Let me remind you once again that though there is an undeniable amount of evidence that seems to point at 33-year-old Corey Richens as the killer of her 39-year-old husband, Eric, she is innocent until proven guilty. I know a lot of the information that has been presented in this episode really paints the picture that Corey is guilty, and a lot of people feel very strongly about her guilt. There are a lot of opinions out there where people feel like Corey is a complete psychopath who murdered her husband and then wrote a book about grief to try and pull one over on people. People feel like she wrote this book to appear innocent and like she is a grieving widow just trying to help her children navigate the loss of their father. They also feel like she wrote it to continue to profit off of Eric. Now, everything that I have provided for you guys is public information that is out there. Of course, we don't know what the defense attorney has in their pocket for the actual trial and what could potentially paint Corey in a more positive light. I will keep you guys posted every step of the way with the preliminary hearing as well as when the trial finally starts. I'm really looking forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this case, so make sure that you guys are a part of my private Facebook group. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. You can also follow me over on Instagram at CrimeaHolly. And if you'd like more true crime content, you can follow me over at TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. Lastly, if you all could just take the time to leave a review and or rating on whatever podcast platform you listen on, I would so greatly appreciate it. This not only helps me know that you guys are enjoying the show, but it also helps others find the show as well. That is all for this week's episode. Until next time, be aware and take care. Bye-bye.